25 minutes to go until 5 o'clock. Halfway through our Wednesday downtown, Rich Kimble, Ryan Waning, and Bruce Pratt joining us for Sports Lit 101, our chance to talk about terrific books. We do it every Wednesday on the show, and this time around, we're joined on the phone, the G&M Family Market phone line, by author Duncan Jameson. We've talked about his book, The Self-Propelled Voyager, How the Cycle Revolutionized Travel, and now we get to talk to Duncan about it. Thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me on.
Well, that's good, Duncan. This is Bruce. One of the things that I found so interesting with this book, and we mentioned it was on before, is that I certainly didn't understand, and I don't think most people understand what a revolutionary machine the bicycle was in terms of allowing people to go places they otherwise could not have gone.
It gives you the opportunity that, as you say, never existed before for independent travel. Really, until the railroad comes along in the 1830s and 40s, you couldn't go very far, very fast. And the problem with the railroad, of course, is it takes you where it wants to go, not necessarily where you want to go. So with the bicycle in the 1870s and after, you now have the opportunity to go when you want, where you want, with no restrictions.
And so, Duncan, it seems as though the bicycle, and you talk about this in the book, was really the transitional vehicle between the old world and the more modern world of the 20th century.
Yes, the bicycle provides an opportunity. It's a part of the second industrial revolution of the late 19th century. And a lot of the technology in the bicycle, spoked wheels and ball bearings and gearing, are precursors for the automobile. Yes, it is very much a transition material.
Now, one of the things that you tell us about in the book are the amazing number of people that rode huge distances around the globe. At a time when there weren't even roads everywhere. And I was wondering if you could just talk a little bit about some of those people that you found to be the most fascinating or thought that what they accomplished was the most extraordinary.
Well, me personally, I'm very risk averse. So my favorite around the world people would have to be the married couple in their early 20s. They left Chicago in 1895, Harry Darwin McElrath and his wife, Hattie. They're in their early 20s. They are sponsored by the Chicago Inter-Ocean, a major national newspaper. And they go west from Chicago, really, with the only thing they're taking with them is what they're carrying on their backs. They get to San Francisco. They have to be delayed in San Francisco because there's a revolution going on in China. They get to China. They travel several thousand miles across China, knowing no Chinese. The Chinese people viewing them as devils or some kind of extraterrestrial beings. They're attacked on a fairly regular basis. They make it from China into Burma. They have a great time going across India because the Grand Trunk, very well-paved road, takes them across India. But then they get into Persia. It's only been a few months since an earlier cyclist, a guy by the name of Frank Lenz, had been murdered in Persia. But they feel that the time is different, that it's quieter, they can make it. And they get stuck in Persia in a blizzard. The blizzard is so bad that they can't ride, they can't do anything. They are finally rescued. Hattie's feet are frostbitten. She loses three toes in Constantinople. Her husband is a physician and assists in the operation. I can't wrap my mind around doing this.
No.
At any time, and as you say, you got no roads.
When One of the things I also think is so great, you're a longtime cyclist. I know you do mostly recumbent now. But you've taken some really long bicycle trips. And I think, as you pointed out, in the 1970s, people got interested in cycling again after sort of a lull from maybe pre-World War II to then. If you could tell the story about the one stop you made in the rain between Ashland and Provincetown, I think you were going to, that I find that one of the most enchanting things I've ever read.
Yes, yes. I set off from Ashland, Ohio, and it's my intent to ride solo, me, my bicycle, and a credit card, to Provincetown, the end of Cape Cod, Massachusetts. I get across New York. I go over the Bear Mountain Bridge into eastern New York. I cross into Connecticut. I'm in a smallish town in Connecticut, and a rainstorm pops up. So, not being particularly interested in getting drowned because it's a drenching storm, I pull into a gas station. The garage bay door is open. I just duck in there. The guy comes over, the owner, and is asking me what I'm doing, and I'm explaining to him. He looks at me and says, "You know, you could have taken a plane." And yeah, I could have taken a plane, but the whole idea behind bicycling is not getting from point A to point B, but the space between point A and point B. And that's the exciting part.
We're talking with author Duncan Jameson about his book, The Self-Propelled Voyager. And not that you can go back in time, but I found myself in reading the book a little bit envious for the experiences that those people had seeing the country, and again, a country primarily without roads, by bicycle. These days when you travel, whether it's on a freeway or an interstate system, every town begins to look the same with the same shops and the same chains. But for the people who travel the country and travel the world, they got to learn a lot more about those places than we might today when we travel.
Yes, and as you suggest, the places are different. You get in your car today, I get in my car, we leave from Portland, Maine, we go to Portland, Oregon, and we stay in Holiday Inns, we eat at Red Lobster's. It's as if we haven't left Portland or Maine. That wasn't the case then. That was much more different, much more exciting, I would think, and certainly much more challenging.
When you think about the way in the 70s people started getting back into bicycling, think of the way the Tour de France is today and how many people take long cycling tours and the like, do you have any hope that maybe we're getting to a more contemplative place with those kinds of recreations?
I would like to believe that to be the case, and I think to a large extent that is. There remains, however, the idea that the road, whatever size road you're on, whether it's an interstate or a suburban street, really belongs only to the automobile. We're seeing a beginnings of a change where bike lanes and separate paths for bicycles are coming back into existence. And to me, that's very positive.
Can you say a quick word about Bernard Newman? Because I found him to be another intriguing guy. In the couple of minutes that we have left, to sort of let people know about what he did, and especially him and Hitler and Lloyd George and all those people.
He's a fascinating character. He's born in the late 19th century into an equestrian family. He can't ride a horse. His father gives up and gets him a bicycle. In the 1930s, he begins riding that bicycle every summer across Europe. He rides through every country in Europe. At different times, he's met Adolf Hitler. He is very much concerned about what the English are doing, what the Germans are doing, that there will be a war. He can't convince anybody of that. He, to me, is the quintessential pre-World War II bicycle traveler. He rides 40, 50 miles a day in the morning. He spends the afternoon talking to the local people. And he does this summer after summer after summer. He's got a couple of dozen fascinating bicycle books. And the interesting thing is, I was just contacted by his grandson trying to find a copy of one of those books. We weren't able to, but I did get contact from him.
Well, it's a wonderful read, and it's a great history of another time, and from a perspective that most of us will never get, and we love the book so much. Duncan, thank you so much for making time for us this afternoon.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. I've enjoyed it.
Great. We will see you soon. If not, I'll see you in West Virginia in 302 days.
I'll be there.
All
Thanks
right.
a lot, Bruce. Have a good day.